in these afternoon sessions from now on, rather than continuing with the relational practice of insight dialogue, I would still like to do some relational practice, but in the more traditional form of the four Brahmaviharas. These are the four skillful qualities of heart and mind that I mentioned on my opening talk on Friday night. And these four are metta, or kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity. And as most of you know, metta is the first of the four meditation practices that really cultivate skillful states of heart and mind. And together, these four qualities are known as the Brahmavihara. And that's a very challenging phrase to translate into English, but it's usually translated as something like heavenly abodes, or divine abidings, or sublime states, or the four immeasurables, because these states, when they're practiced to their utmost, become boundless, without boundaries, extended unconditionally to all beings. And cultivating them is a very direct way into experiencing deep happiness. So that's partly why they're called the heavenly realms, because we can experience heaven here and now when we cultivate these qualities. And the happiness that comes from developing the Brahmaviharas is a bit different than what we usually think of as happiness. So as I was saying last night, most people who don't have any training in this kind of understanding, they tend to look outside themselves for happiness and to try and control the external world as a way of getting satisfaction. And perhaps you may have seen this over the course of your own life, if you think back at different stages in your life, these different things that you thought were really going to make you happy. Perhaps when you were a teenager, you thought, well, if I could just finish high school, then I'd be happy. And then you finish high school, and it's like, if I can just get a job, then I'll be happy. If I get a job, if I could just get a better job, then I'll be happy. Or if I can just find a partner, then I'll be happy. If I could find a better partner, then I'll be happy. So there's always something that's just out of reach that's kind of keeping us energetically moving forward and unaware of that dissatisfaction that's driving us so much of the time, wanting more money or more status or more fame or a beautiful home or an exotic holiday or a sabbatical or a dream retirement. We all have our own versions of what we're grasping after. And of course, those things in themselves are completely fine, but it's when we don't see how much energy we're investing in trying to have everything come together perfectly, and when we believe that they're going to bring us lasting satisfaction, that's when we get caught in suffering. So these Brahmavihara practices offer us a different way of finding happiness, one that's far more sustainable and far more in alignment with the truth. So this morning I was trying to remember the opening lines of the Dhammapada, and I had to go and look them up, because again, they point to really needing to know our own inner states if we want to find more happiness. So these lines say, we are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts, we make the world. Speak or act with an impure mind, and trouble will follow you, as the wheel follows the ox that draws the cart. We are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts, we make the world. Speak or act with a pure mind, and happiness will follow you as your shadow, unshakable. So we are what we think. with our thoughts, we make the world. It's a very powerful statement. And if we want more happiness, we need to train our hearts and minds to find this happiness in the right places rather than the wrong places. And the Buddha offered us these four sets of trainings, the four Brahmaviharas. And for some unfortunate reason, metta seems to be the one that gets the most attention. And this is unfortunate because it can give the idea that metta is the appropriate response to every situation. But as I'll be exploring later, that's not always the case. And these four Brahmaviharas have a very powerful way of strengthening and reinforcing each other, kind of like the four strands of a four-ply piece of rope. So if we just take only one of these strands, it doesn't have the same power. So it's true that metta is the foundation of the four practices. And it's said that when this metta, this goodwill or kindness or basic friendliness, turns towards pain or suffering, it flowers as compassion. On the other side of the coin, when this same metta or goodwill turns towards what's going well, it flowers as mudita or appreciative joy. And when compassion and appreciative joy are completely in balance with each other, we get equanimity, which is that totally even balance of mind that's not wanting anything, not resisting anything. So this relationship between the four Brahmaviharas is expressed quite beautifully in a short verse from Longchen Rabchampa, a 14th century Tibetan Buddhist monk. He says, "Out of the soil of friendliness, or metta, grows the beautiful bloom of compassion, karuna, watered with tears of joy, under the cool shade of the tree of equanimity, upekkha." So metta is the soil that all of these qualities grow out of. And it's often translated as loving kindness. So many of you may have heard metta referred to as loving kindness. But in many ways, this is not such a helpful translation because, well, for a start, in English, it sounds a bit sort of wishy-washy, at least to my ears, a little bit sentimental. And the word love in English has such a wide range of meanings. And we can talk about loving ice cream, for example, and it's kind of meaningless. And then there's romantic love, which is often very exclusive, very emotionally unstable. It's only offered for one person. There's often a lot of attachment in it, and it often doesn't last. And so in many ways, it's the opposite of the kind of love that's being cultivated with metta, which is intended to be without limits, without boundaries, non-exclusive. So I prefer to leave metta untranslated, and you can find your own most appropriate translation of it for you, whether that's kindness, friendliness, goodwill. In some suttas, it's even referred to as non-ill will. So right now, hopefully, you might be experiencing some non-ill will. So hopefully that sets the bar even lower. It makes this quality pretty accessible. So even though we might think of metta as kindness, it might sound ordinary, but it has immense power. And some of you know His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, is reported to have said, "My religion is very simple. My religion is kindness." It's so simple that it's radical and very profound. And can you imagine how different the world would be if each one of us really tried to keep this kindness front and center in everything that we did in our lives? So these sublime abidings, they have a number of benefits, not just for the beings that we're offering our kindness to, but for we ourselves. And you may have experienced this even on this retreat. If you think of a time when the mind was caught in these afflictive energies that I've been talking about, of greed, of hatred and delusion, anybody not had any experience of that? No. So they're pretty common. We've had experiences when the mind just gets gripped by them. And you may have noticed that in that tightness and contracting, it's almost like the mind becomes a magnet for all these other afflictive states to kind of pile in there too. Well, the opposite is also true, that when the heart and mind are in the terrain of metta, of kindness, there's a kind of a resilience and an ease and an openness such that these adventitious or visiting defilements can't get purchased, they can't get a toehold. There's nowhere for them to land because there's a kind of a smoothness and a suppleness in the heart and the mind. So these qualities of the Brahmaviharas are very powerful protection. I think of them as being like soft armor because they make it less easy for the afflictive energies to get their hooks into us. So although the Buddha stressed the importance of this quality of metta all through his teachings, he didn't actually give a lot of instruction on how to actually practice it. There's really only a couple of suttas from the time of the Buddha where he gave practice instructions. And the main one instructs us to simply abide with our hearts imbued with kindness and then radiate this kindness outwards in the four compass directions, north, south, east, west, and then up, above, below, and all around to cover the entire world. Easy. Just abide with your heart imbued with kindness. But I think for most of us, that's a pretty high starting place. So later on in the Buddhist tradition, they developed this method of using words, using phrases, and offering these phrases that are intended to evoke the quality of kindness towards different categories of people, starting with people where the kindness might come more easily, and then gradually building the metta muscle to include more and more categories of people. So standard phrases are things like, may I be happy and free from suffering. May I keep myself free from enmity, affliction, and anxiety, and live happily. For myself, I prefer to use phrases that evoke the good qualities. Because of the mind's inherent negativity bias, when I hear things like be free from enmity, affliction and suffering, my mind latches onto those things and I get tangled up. So I prefer to talk about safety, bless you, safety and ease and peace and so on. So the strategy with this practice is always to follow the path of least resistance. So we start with where the metta comes most naturally, feels most easily, and then we progress through different categories of beings towards more neutral people, then to so-called difficult people, and then to include all beings, animals and insects, fish, birds, being seen and unseen, all beings everywhere. And one of the analogies that they use for this is that of a waterfall, water dropping down through several basins. So we start, we let the metta flow until it fills the basin at the top, and then when that basin is naturally full, it spills over to fill the next basin, the basin for more neutral people. And then as that fills, it overflows, so on down to the difficult person, and on, in this very natural, organic sequence. So traditionally, in the traditional texts, we start with ourselves to offer the kindness towards. But for many of us, ourselves is not necessarily the easiest person. In fact, at times we may be putting ourselves in the difficult person. So I prefer to start with a category known as the benefactor. And in this context, a benefactor really refers to any person in our lives who has supported us in some way, who has been kind to us. So a mentor, perhaps, or a teacher, perhaps a high school teacher, a university, or a meditation teacher. It could be a kindly aunt or uncle, or a favorite grandparent. It could even be a small child, if you have a relative that when you think of them, there's just a natural sense of warmth and kindness. It doesn't even have to be a human being. If you have a pet that you have that sort of natural ease and warmth for, you can work with the pet. Or if you could use a public figure who inspires you, perhaps if you feel a sense of connection with, say, someone like the Dalai Lama, his, from what I can tell, his natural warmth and radiance, if that inspires you, you could work with the Dalai Lama as your benefactor. So it doesn't matter so much who the benefactor is that there's just a sense of warmth and appreciation when you think of them. And I just want to say up front that this practice is a training. And sometimes when we're invited into cultivating warmth, at least for myself, the inner two-year-old can go, no, I'm not doing that. And metaphorically, we dig our heels in, or we rebel, or we shut down, or we get stage fright, and all the warmth just sort of disappears, and we can't feel anything. If that's true for you, you can just bring your insight practice to knowing, oh, feeling blank is like this. Feeling frustrated is like this. Self-judgment is like this. So seeing if you can bring that same quality of interest and curiosity to whatever's happening, even if it doesn't seem to be in the terrain of what's being invited. Because the most important aspect of this practice is that we're cultivating the intention towards metta. Whether we get any kind of result, in quotation marks, is irrelevant, because if we're practicing for a result, then it's not unconditional. So we're constantly setting the intention, and if all you did was sit for the next half an hour and recite these phrases, even if they were mechanical, just that recitation is strengthening the intention on some level. So the emotion, or the feeling, or the felt sense of this is a byproduct. So if you don't actually get it, that's fine. Cultivating the intention is enough. So the phrases I'll be using, as I said earlier, focus on positive qualities. May you be safe, may you be healthy, may you be happy, may you know peace. And I'll be repeating them through the session. When you do this in your own practice, you're perfectly welcome to use your own phrases that make sense to you. And I like to start by trying to connect with my own well-being, because when my own body and heart and mind are more relaxed and at ease, I find it easier to offer metta to others. So that's the general overview of what we'll be doing